Howdy ho.
Hey, hey.
So we were just talking off air, and holidays can be stressful. They can be fun. Scale 1 to 10. Just got done with Easter. Going into, you know, there in my house, there are birthdays, Father's Day, Mother's Day, 4th of July. Are holidays typically stressful for you or not? They fun or they like, oh, no.
They are typically pretty mellow for me. I don't get too tense about it because I don't have real high expectations. It doesn't mean I'm Debbie Downer. It just means I'm just happy to be with people that are happy to be with me. And so I don't need a lot to make the holiday a fantastic one.
The more family, the better the holiday or the worse the holiday?
For me, the more the better.
Okay.
I like everybody hanging out and being together. Although a lot of holidays, it's just Mitch and me, and we're pretty happy to just hang out together too. So that works.
Can I correct you?
You may.
It's Mitch and I. Sorry, it's a family joke. Well, I'm glad you said, as long as my brother doesn't come, that's good. it's so funny, though, because now we literally in our household distinguish when we say, is the whole family going to be there? Because the whole family sometimes means me, my boys, my grandkids, girlfriends, spouses, all that.
Right.
Versus my whole family, you, Mitch, Derek, mom, dad, Renee, kids, grandkids,
right.
Nieces, nephews, uncles. And so it's crazy. When it's that big, I'm thankful that it's not at my house.
Right.
And typically at your place, unfortunately, fortunately. But yeah, I love holidays when there's family. I love holidays, even when there's not. But okay, we're going to kick off. This is a question that I think would be fun for people out there who are listening to answer. But also, and again, please send your comments to minglematemary@gmail.com. Love to hear from you. In fact, we need to get into a question that came in, but I'm going to get off topic. This is the question.
Okay.
Garth, shut up. Say the question. In retrospect, what is something that your parents were wise in doing while raising you that now positively affects your marriage? And now this is interesting because we have the same parents.
We do.
So it'll be interesting to see what you think and what I think. So
the first thing that comes to mind is our parents did not let us have or keep a bad attitude. So if we had an attitude, both mom and dad, I recall them giving us some kind of instruction saying, you know, change your attitude. And I'm so glad they did, because it's not that things don't bother me, but I don't hang on to it. I know how to set it aside so it doesn't color my whole day. I try to put it aside so then it doesn't put me in a bad mood the way I relate to everybody. So yeah, they don't let us hang on to a bad attitude.
Right. I remember dad literally saying, you have 5 minutes to pout or to sulk or to have a bad attitude and then you're done.
Right.
So he recognized that we were upset or hurt or whatever, but then we also had to recognize that we had a choice to choose our attitude and we didn't have to be that way the rest of the day or the week. So,
yes, that's a great lesson.
Yeah. I think for me, what was most beneficial, and it might be just my personality, was that they were never afraid to not only discipline us or share their opinion, but they always instructed why.
Yes. You know,
why was that wrong? Why was that attitude wrong? Why were those words wrong? Why what you did was wrong, more than just that's wrong, don't do it.
Right.
But they would explain it to me. And again, for me, I heard all the time growing up from dad, you can be 100% right and with your attitude be completely wrong.
Yes, yes.
And then the other one was your strengths will be your greatest weaknesses unless you know how to use those, you know, with your faith and with your relationship with God, stuff like that. So you processed more than just being told it was wrong. You learned how to process why they were disappointed or upset or why they were disciplining you.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just, you know, a spanking with no definition or understanding of what was going on. So
yeah, it was that critical thinking in seeing past just the behavior as to how does it relate to the rest of you.
Right. And we've talked in the past, things our parents, we felt like could have done better, but they are far, you know, what they did right far outweighs what they did wrong. Do you see what they did right now, conversely, in how you raised your son and how he raises his grandkids or your grandkids?
I think so. I haven't thought about it a lot. You know, going along with that, one of the things mom and dad really helped us was to, again, you know, adjust your attitude. And so also training us to not be overly sensitive, to be not in an unhealthy way, but in a healthy way, to be able to let things go and not let things, you know, bother you to the point where it really impacts you. Dad was always extremely optimistic. Mom was always a cheerleader and encouraging to us. And so we all know what it's like to work with people or have friends who are super sensitive. They take a lot of stuff personally. And so then it makes their life really hard and makes their marriages hard. And so I see where I'm not overly sensitive to where, you know, Mitch has to, I don't think, walk on eggshells all the time. And so I think that helped us raise our son to be able to let things go and not be overly sensitive. And it makes him a much easier husband, I think, to live with. I think I have to ask his wife, but.
Right. We can get Mandy on the phone. We'll FaceTime her. And
she'd love it.
So I'm going to throw you a curveball here, which I'm good at. I know we've got something we want to get into, but this just struck me, and I don't know if it's you know, God pointing a different direction.
All right, let's bring it.
So what are things, we can take this from five different angles, looking back on our parents and the close friends that they surrounded themselves with who had definite impact on us as kids growing up, thinking of like the Goviers, the Angelos, the Redders, people like that who were in our lives
right. Almost
as much to some degree as parents.
Right.
When we think about parents today and their kids, what are the benefits? What are the dangers? What are the cautions of who you as a parent allow to influence and be in and around your kids and your family? Any thoughts or ideas for that?
Just what is probably known to most parents, and that is you need other adults in your kid's life. And because other people can influence them in such a powerful, positive way, it's that age-old thing. I can say something to my son, and he maybe completely ignores it, doesn't resonate with him, it doesn't land, he does not interpret it or even incorporate it. But someone else who's maybe my friend who also cares about my son can say those same things, and for whatever reason, it's a different voice and he really hears it and it really lands. And so I think we have to be wise about who we are close with as adults and then allow our children to be in on that relationship and just be around, because other positive adults, powerful, wise adults, it's all good. It's one more person speaking into your child's life.
There is something to be said about the loyalty of the people mom and dad chose to be friends with, that close inner circle, because they're still friends today.
Right.
They're still in contact. They're still there. The loyalty where you could call a Daryl Redders at 3 a.m. and say, I'm out of gas, you know,
right,
on 12 and 18. And Daryl would get in his car.
Right.
And get gas and he'd show up there. Or thinking of a great, great insight once. During summer, mom and dad were gone, and I went and stayed with Dell and Elaine for, I don't know, 3-4 days. And so Dell was at that time, I think he was selling tools,
yes,
like power tools,
yes,
and stuff. And
yes,
so I went with him for the whole day in his van, and we went around, and we stopped at one construction site. It was like, I don't know if it was a house or a smaller condominium, up on the second floor, and he was talking to guys, and there was a nail gun on the ground, hooked up with nails in it, and he's 5 feet away from me talking to these two guys, and I'm all of maybe 10 or 11, and I pick up the gun and I'm looking at it and I'm just like enamored by it, and I pull the trigger and it fires, poof, and I turn and I look, and Dell is talking to these two guys, and he kind of looks at me and goes, yeah, that trigger's what fires it, and pulls the nail out of his arm.
Oh no.
Yeah for real. And then keeps talking. And I was like, oh my goodness, I just shot him in the nail. or shot him with a nail. But the thing was, is I remember, didn't get mad, didn't yell, didn't scream, didn't swear.
Right.
We got in the truck. He didn't even bring it up. I brought it up. Said, I'm sorry. And then I don't think it was that day, but maybe the next day when mom and dad came to get me, Dell told it in a very humorous way and said, yeah, your son learned how to use a nail gun. And I remember telling dad, yeah, I accidentally shot him in the arm. And he laughed about it, but thinking the opposite of what it could have had on me if he would have been a yeller, screamer, go up and hit me or slap me. So it's important as parents that we understand we need those groups around us and our families and our kids.
We do.
But again, even today's world, caution who you allow around your kids and families. But I think the greatest benefit is when, as a kid, you see the connection between mom and dad and their close friends. And knowing in today's world that's possible, it's healthy, it's good for your kids. And so to get out there and be a part of that. So I'm blessed in the church here. I've got some great families around us and had some great families while the boys were growing up. So
Yes, it makes a difference.
Okay. All right. So that was another rabbit trail. You're welcome. let's get into, there are differences in communication between spouses or partners. And I want you to walk that through with us and our listeners.
Okay.
Because I find it incredibly interesting. And this is one of the things that you travel and speak on.
It is. Yeah.
Can we call you an expert in this area?
No. In fact, I will read off my sources because this is something that I see, but it did not originally come from me or my research or study, but I did get it from reputable sources.
Okay.
So this comes from some communication experts, Deborah Tannen. Also some information from Robin Lakoff, L-A-K-O-F-F, Julia Wood, Cynthia Torpa, and Luann Brizentine. So it comes from about three or four different books on research that they did. And of course, there's always exceptions and outliers, but here's some things that I gleaned from their research. So I'm going to use the categories men and women. I know some of our audience thinks differently about the genders, but I'll tell you and present it, and we can talk about it in the way that I learned it.
Yes.
And people then can make their own interpretations, how it applies to them. But
well, and you don't even have to say genders. It can be personalities, different personalities.
Sure.
Have different communication styles.
Much of these, though, are based on brain differences that they see in male and female brains.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. So, well, and it's kind of a hot topic, but it's nice to just consider perspectives. You don't have to agree. These are perspectives that these researchers gleaned. A lot of this is from a book called The Female Brain, which talks about the differences in male brains and female brains, or the brains that are washed over in utero with testosterone when that baby is developing. So anyway, take it for whatever it is.
It's good stuff. Either way.
Dig deep. So, okay. So some differences that these researchers saw. Men tend to focus on, in their communication, they tend to posture themselves and focus on who has the upper hand or the status. So in talking, just in general, in communicating, they tend to be more aware of upper hand, position, status. Women in communication tend to focus more on relationships. I don't know if you agree or disagree or if that's your experience.
I do. It makes me think of a quote. I'm going to slaughter it. When women talk, 90% of it is casual and is casual, but they mean 100% of it. When men talk, 10% of it is casual, but they mean 100% of it. Meaning with women, you have many times have to read into it because they're trying to connect, but they don't really quite know how, where a guy's just like, shirt looks ugly, should have wore something else, you know, kind of like more direct.
Oh, yes. So
they're probably not going to say stuff like that the whole day.
Right.
But you know, the one time they say it, they're going to mean 100% of what they say, though they're not going to talk much. Back to the book, Love and Respect.
Yes.
That author shared a statistic where they put women in a room for an hour and they didn't know each other. And they talked so many words, what, 20,000 words.
Right.
And very little of really knowing anything about the other person. They put men in a room for an hour and they shared very little, far less. But what they did share was much deeper.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. Men went deeper?
Men. So women would talk, what's your daughter? And how's your, where do you work? Oh, my husband's like that. Men would sit in a room and they'd say very little. But then the man, one of the men might say something like, yeah, well, that's like my son. He's a complete disappointment.
Oh.
And you go, wow, there's a lot that's really bare and open.
Right, right.
And where a woman might say a lot of stuff, but never really hone in on one really specific open, this is my gut-wrenching, who I am type of thing.
Because maybe the women were more, women tend to be more focused on how their communication is going to feel for the other person listening and trying to. So it's interesting because some of these bullet points will support that and some of these bullet points will maybe challenge that.
Yeah, yeah, let's hear it.
Men tend to talk to give information or report. So that's a little bit about what you were saying. They just put it out there. You know, here's the bullet point. Women tend to talk to collect information and gain rapport. You know, so I want to build rapport. I don't necessarily need to know the bottom line that you think my shirt is ugly, but right. I want to have a good feeling between us. Whereas right. as a man, you might just say your shirt is ugly and you're not as hung up with being concerned how that makes me feel.
Oh, and I'm so glad to get that off my chest.
Yeah, yeah. Now, okay, the shirt is ugly. Okay. Men tend to talk about things, business, sports, food, facts, figures. Women tend to talk about people, relationships, and their feelings. Men tend to focus on facts, reason, and logic because their prefrontal cortex tends to be a little bit bigger and a little bit more developed. Not developed as in they're smarter, but they use their prefrontal cortex, and women tend to use the other parts of their brain. So they tend to focus more on feelings, senses, or intuitiveness, and meaning. And that can be seen on brain imaging, the different parts of the brain that light up.
Light up, yeah.
Yeah, between men and women. Men tend to thrive in communication on competing and achieving, and that comes through often in how they communicate to others. Women tend to thrive on harmony and relating, and that tends to get communicated. Men know, in quotes, by analyzing and figuring something out. Again, that's using their prefrontal cortex more. And women have a sense of knowing by intuitiveness, by a sense, by something they feel. And that is also can be seen in what area of their brain lights up more. Men tend to be more assertive and more direct, just what you shared. Women tend to communicate in a way that's they're trying to gain more cooperativeness.
Yeah.
And men tend to be focused, specific, and more logical. Women tend to communicate and see a situation in a more holistic, big picture view, more organic. They're not as often as direct and to the point. Again, can be seen in the brain imaging. Men are more at ease with order, rules, structure, linear conversation. And women, you can see in their brains, they talk with more intuition and fluidity. Sometimes we talk all around. We're talking about all this stuff. And men maybe are like, okay, just get to the point.
Men are like that?
Yeah, and I'm probably demonstrating this very thing right now.
No.
Men immediately tend to want, that's kind of a bad way to say that. Men immediately want to get working on the project and the fix. So we see that more with men's communication. Women tend to want to ask questions before beginning the project and not get to the fix, but consider all the options.
What can I add something to that?
You may.
I find that they want to ask questions because they want to feel and make sure you feel as a man that issue as well.
Yes.
So they're asking questions to know. My wife doesn't know that I understand until she thinks I can feel it.
Like, that's right.
And so I think that's why a reason for a lot of those questions is he in tune? Does he get this?
Right. Is he really? Yeah. And one of the things that gets explained in some of these paragraphs above on this handout is what they saw in men's brains. Men in their physical body, their body and brain tends to interpret communication a lot quicker as being threatening. So they show a lot quicker being like their perspiration rate went up, their heart rate went up, so their body shows they're under more stress because their brain is registering that this is a fight or flight or freeze moment, that they might be right. in danger. And women can go a lot longer before their body is showing that that heightened state of and so this is can get a lot of couples in trouble because women will tend to pursue in conversation right. and men tend to, well, the woman says he just shuts down or he just, you know, he just walks away or, and often, and women can be really frustrated. And what is often good to explain to the wife is, hey, your husband's brain is telling him this is a dangerous situation.
Right.
It's coming back from their amygdala where it registers fight or flight or freeze. And so he's going to withdraw or shut down because his brain and body is saying you're in danger, you're in danger. And a woman, it takes her much longer typically for her brain and body to be saying that in just general communication. And so she just keeps coming with words, more words, more words. And so if I can, as a wife, remember, hey, less is more. My husband is going to stay in the conversation a lot longer if I give less and let him ponder, consider, reflect, and that's how. So those are some thoughts about differences in communication.
There's a DJ that we need to send this to. She's a female morning DJ, and I oftentimes driving to work because I've got a 35, 40-minute drive. I want to like get to the point, play the next song. You know, it starts out about what God was speaking to her about, and then she's sharing with you how to make a biscuit recipe, and her daughter doesn't like biscuits but goes to Elhood Elementary right. School, and you're like,
"Gah!" Well, and one of the things that I try to do, because I had to learn this in our marriage, is I like lots of words. I have lots of words to use. And so I like to tell Mitch, hey, there's something I want to talk about, and I'm pretty sure I have a lot of words about it. I have a lot of words I want to say. Is this a good time? Are right. you in a headspace where I can just vent? Because if great. I don't give him a heads up, his eyes, rightfully so, can glaze over, and then I'm hurt and frustrated because I feel like he's not really, you know, into it. And then if I give him a heads up and he says, yeah, and then he knows, okay, I really want to listen. Or if he says, oh man, I'm exhausted, can we talk about it tomorrow? Then we're in a good space. We've communicated about how we're going to communicate.
Right. Two thoughts in regards to that. One is when you get together with couples, it'll take the three or four men who kind of don't know each other about 3 minutes to find out what each one does.
Yep.
Or right away you go, well, this is Jeff. He works at, and they fill in the blank for him. Where women can talk 30, 40 minutes. And I'll go, well, you know, what does she do? What do you mean? What does she have a job? I don't know. But well, tell me about what they learned about their family, you know.
Sure.
But their daughter, you know, Elena is in a college right now. And I'll be like, okay, so is she just an at-home mom? Does she? I don't know. You know, so it's different, again, the way the male and the female brain are wired.
Yeah.
In that sense. The other thing that, as you're talking, made me think, and this isn't necessarily, well, it's in every relationship, I think, and it's definitely in my relationship, but there's a value level that I assign to a conversation early on. Like, do I need to plug in and really focus on this?
Okay.
So if Kim comes home from shopping and it's for the grandkids or Christmas and it's important to her, we got to go through every bag, every item, and right. I got to hear what a deal it was.
Right.
And so that would be value zero for me.
Right.
So I'm sure my eyes are glazed over. I sit there and I listen to her. I would say probably 9 out of 10 for me is when she wants to talk to me about an issue about us.
Sure.
It's 9 out of 10. But 10 out of 10 where she's got me totally focused is when she wants to talk about our boys.
Yes.
If something's going on with our boys, which is interesting, but it's a great reflector for me to go, sometimes I need to whatever it is, if it's not about our boys, but something underneath, I need to still give it that importance. I need to give it a 10 out of 10.
Right.
Because I can tell it's important to her, right, even though it means nothing to me.
Yeah.
Or it's the 20th time she's brought it up and she won't listen to my advice.
Right.
She, you know.
Right.
But when Mitch comes to you, what are the things that if he's going to talk to you about that on your scale 0 to 10 that, you know, does he ever come to you about class and accounting and whatever, and you like just like whatever?
Sure. And I mean, I don't know a lot about accounting in and of itself, but that is a big part of what he does. He teaches college level business and accounting. And so when he is talking about that, in fact, just this week, he talked about a problem with some of the material they use and why it's difficult for the instructors and how it's been challenging for him. I want to hear about that. And I, over the years, have trained myself to zero in, because that's something that, you know, to me, it's about how, what percent of his day in his life does that topic, in this case, accounting, take up how much space in his life? Well, it takes up a lot of space in his life. It's what he does for a career. So I try to zero in. Now, early in our marriage, I mean, I don't care a lot about accounting. I depend on him to do our finances. But I, again, like you, I've learned, no, that's a big part of his life. So I want to zero in. But for sure, if he may talk about our son or our grandkids or caring for his elderly mom, those topics will get my attention, you know, right away. And I don't have to work on paying close attention, because those we share, like you and Kim, those are things we share, important. But yeah, his career, the topic of business and accounting, I've really learned to clue in.
So are there practical steps? Couple comes in, she's like, he never listens to me, or she never listens to me when I try to talk to her about, are there practical things, or do you just tell people, hey, this is important, listen?
There's practical things, because, first I find out who tends to be the communicator that pursues and has a lot of words, and who, because sometimes it isn't based on gender. It's more based on their personalities.
Right.
And
that's the pursuer and the
withdrawer.
The withdrawer. I always call him the runner, but yeah.
Yeah. Same thing.
Yeah.
But I think in general, I try to first sell them on the importance of talking about how you're talking. Meta communication. Communicate about how you're communicating.
Right.
And kind of we try to identify and break that down. What are the patterns that they fall into? What doesn't work for them? And then how can we correct that? And really getting them to take that serious. A lot of people get married and they assume we should just know how to talk.
Right.
That's just a myth.
Yeah.
We often don't know how to really talk to our spouse.
No, the very first Kevin James comedy special, I don't know if you saw it, he's talking about the differences between he and his girlfriend. And one of the examples he uses, which is so funny to me because it's relevant in my life, goes to a movie that his girlfriend has already seen. And she'll be like, oh, you're going to like this part. You're going to like this part. Watch. And he'll be like, yeah, I am. No, really watch. Because I am. No, no, really pay attention. He'll be like, okay, I don't know, but he goes back to the fact that she wants to make sure he's in tune, like tune. This is important to me, really tune in. He's like,
right.
I don't know how much more I can, like, the open of my eyes or, you
right,
know.
Right.
And I feel like a lot of times women are that way when they're talking to their husband, like, no, I really need you to listen to me on this.
Right.
And it works if it's really something important, but if it's, I really need you to listen to me on this. You won't believe how much money I saved on Geico, you know, whatever it is.
Right, yeah,
you'd be like,
right, right.
Look, not everything can be, I really need to listen to this. And I love the fact that you go to Mitch and say, okay, I got a lot of words. Is now the time? I think that's beautiful, because there would be times when I would just say, no, I can't right now. I'm drained, or I'm tired, or I'm busy, or whatever. Many times early in the morning, I get up with my computer. I'm sitting in the bedroom. Kim's has her computer and in bed. And we'll just kind of be doing our own thing. And she'll all of a sudden want to talk to me. She doesn't realize I'm actually online with a team that I have in India.
Right.
Working on stuff. And I'll be like, I can't listen right now.
Right.
And she'll want to know why. And I'll say, well, because I'm right now I'm talking with the team in India. She gets that.
Right.
They're just about to go to bed for the night. We're just waking up. But if in any conversation,
yes,
you can say, you know what, now's just not a good time. And not as an excuse to blow it off.
Right. It's not about just putting the other person off, but it's really setting you both up for a better experience. The other thing I had to learn was that I would often say, you know, what do you think? Or what are you thinking? Or, well, how do you feel? And if Mitch says, I'm not thinking anything, or I don't have any big feelings about this, I had to accept that that's an honest answer.
Right.
He's not trying to get out of having some long, deep talk. He just probably truly doesn't have any real extensive thoughts or feelings on that. And I don't want to frustrate him or me. I need to just take that at face value and say, okay, you know, or if it's something super important to me, I will say, can you think about that? We can talk about it again later. But that used to get us into big, you know, spirals, because I'd be like, well, how do you feel? And he'd be like, I don't know, or I don't feel about that. And I had the hardest time accepting that answer.
Well, early on, I would say, I don't care, which
right.
to Kim was like, what do you mean you don't care? So I've had to learn to say, it's not that I don't care, but I'm more interested in moving in the direction that you feel strongest about, you know?
Yes.
So it's not that I don't care. So real quick, I'm going to come to you and talk to you about how I think I should take a job. And let's say I'm Mitch.
Okay.
I should take a job in Econimawalk, which is going to move us this, that, and the other. So it's a major decision. What would you say is the best time to approach you, the circumstances, the day, the time of day, maybe the season in life, whatever? If I'm going to come and talk to you about something big, what are Sheree's go-to moments on the calendar?
Okay, first of all, I would say, tell me that you want to talk and what you want to talk about. And if you can, ask me when a good time is. But in general, don't bring this up after a full day. Don't bring it up at night after dinner, just before we're going to go to bed. I am tired. It's going to be really hard to focus. Don't bring it up if I'm in the middle of trying to do something else. Don't bring it up if you know that I have already had strong feelings about something else, and so now you're asking me to take on another big topic. You know, set me up for success. So pick a time during the day when I have some space in my head. So if I still have small children at home, it can't be in the middle of trying to care for our kids. Now, sometimes there are urgent things you have to talk about when you talk about, but for the most part, like a job change or something like that, for me, optimum time when we go on a walk together, or if we have to drive a ways in the car, and so it's kind of this protected time. If our son was off with his grandparents and we had time to ourselves, sometimes, this is with a lot of exceptions, but sometimes it worked to introduce the topic. We would text or email each other, hey, let's talk about this. And that was kind of a way to kind of get ourselves prepared and ready. And sometimes a long email is also helpful too. So those are just some things that off the top of my head.
So when you're saying that, it makes me think about how a couple will, it's not a big issue, but they'll come at the wrong time.
Yes.
And get frustrated and turn it into a big issue.
Yes.
Just because it's the wrong time.
Yep.
You know, and I'm guilty of that, where I just, you know, I'm like, now's not the time. And I make the issue of when we're talking bigger than the issue of what we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
Which, again, I'm probably guilty of quite a bit. So one more question regarding that. Are there times when you know when you approach Mitch, he's going to be in a mindset of not trying to fix it, but more willing to listen to it? Because we kind of talked about the differences in communication styles.
Right, right.
Are there certain times in his life or day or week or calendar that you know he's more ready to listen than to try to fix it?
Again, he's always more ready to listen if he knows it's coming. It's the worst if I blindside him.
Okay.
So that really, regardless of, you know, and of course, I'm not going to try to bring up stuff with him if he's in the middle of doing schoolwork for his job. I know that's dumb on my part. I'm not going to try to nail down or have some big conversation if we've got a lot of other stuff going on late at night. I used to do the dreadful thing of, you know, being upset about something, wanted to talk to him, and I would hold it in. And finally, I'd wake him up in the middle of the night because I couldn't sleep.
Well, wonderful.
It was terrible. 2 a.m, I'm crying. We have to talk. Well, he was like, oh, brother. And so, you know, we had to learn. But I think for him, we've both learned, he's very aware of not taking on that, let me just help you solve it.
Right.
And that's from being married for 40 years. He's very, very aware of, he knows I need to just talk it out and get it out. And then he's very careful about, in a gentle way of kind of sensing, do I want a solution? And I'm better about just saying, what do I do about this? Or I need a solution versus, oh, I just need to tell you how hard this is.
I like it. Well, I have something to tell you.
Okay.
We're out of time.
Okay. All right.
So.
Man. All right. It's a good time to tell me.
Thanks for checking out MingleMateMarried.com. Thanks for listening to the podcast, rating and sharing it. And remember, love is a choice.
And marriage is hard, but it's worth it.
See you next time.